Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With all due respect, sir, next time you want to make a major policy departure, you might want to discuss it with your national security advisor first.
We did discuss it, Jack.
We discussed it in private, which is where I thought it would remain.
Well, now it's public. Now it's policy. Get behind it.
You're going to get yourself reelected.
This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Everyone, and welcome to the first episode of FilmSack of 2021. This is episode 496, and we are still mining the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. You took Borat from Kazakhstan. Now you must pay Dunaway.
Get into my pod. Oh, hi.
Hi.
Okay, Colonel Bob. I'm in the pilot seat, and I've told all the terrorists to get off my plane. What's next? Turn off the autopilot? But it's been 2 weeks since I landed an intro, Bob. It's like riding a bike. Look, Colonel Bob, I don't know what kind of bike you ride back in D.C., but I see at least 6 dials and 2 flips just in the seat of my handlebars here. So how about we cut the crap and get me, my FilmSack family, on the ground safely? Hold on a second, Bob. My co-pilot is gurgling something incomprehensible. What's that, William H. Macy? Try rolling your R's. Ah. You say the possibility of successfully navigating an asteroid field is approximately 3,720 to 1. Well, that has nothing to do with what we're doing here. But never tell me the odds. Anywho, you know what, Bob? Maybe this whole thing is a bad idea. Say, why don't you just send in a crack team of FilmSack hosts to zipline us into an intro that is not a flying dumpster fire of parallels drawn between Harrison Ford's iconic role as Han Solo and this? Save your strength. There'll be another time. Randy?
Oh, we're heading into the new year with your transition of the Randy transition. I like it.
That's right.
All right.
That's right.
New year, new chance to do it again. Hey, well done. Also with us, of course, the name you just heard. Randy? Sure. Great. Whatever. Where's my family, Jordan?
Aloha, Scott. Brian. And Randy. Of course, very nice. Thank you for joining. I tell you now how I make great once glorious nation Kazakhstan. You too make great hijack and freeing of prisoner general leader of country by follow 3 easy step. Very nice. Number one, have man on inside. Yes. Inside man should be beautiful like statue and should have very large testicle. Number two, how many men should take for film crew? Some say 2 or 3. You take 7. No one question you. If questioned, you take off trouser belt and show manhood. Number 3. Shoot many hostage for fun. Do not shoot girl. Scare very old lady by kiss girl and make her new first lady Kazakhstan. High five.
Oh, man. So that was Borat, everybody listening. That was Borat.
Right. Wait, I thought it was Borat. Why are you trying to tell us?
Oh, I don't need it. Okay, Borat. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, different ears, different time.
I didn't think we could be racist to Kazakhstan, but I guess you're proving me wrong.
Borat made it okay. Borat was like, hey, what if we made two movies where now the rest of the world feels like they can dump on us? Enjoy. I think they have a statue now. Anyway, finally, with this, Brian, that pilot was a poor man's Daniel Stern Ibbot.
It's true. They do have a statue, and it's very nice. Mr. President, thank you so much for the parachute. Are you sure this is the safest way to get us all off this plane? I mean, I know I'm just the intern to the assistant of the Secretary of the Department of Agriculture, but maybe there's somebody who's more deserving. No? Okay, it just seems that you're giving parachutes to all the interns first, and maybe some of the cabinet members should get them. I don't know. I mean, look, you just pushed intern Tiffany out of the butt of the plane, and okay, yeah. Maybe I am stalling. All right, here I go. Psych. Yeah, I was just noticing. It's like 10 degrees out there. Look, intern Tiffany is starting to turn blue. All I've got is this suit I got from the men's warehouse. And, well, yeah, to be honest, I do love the way I look. But it's freezing, and there's no air. And I just, couldn't I just stay on the plane? Okay, all right, I'm jumping. Here we go. One, two, wait, is it raining? No, it's not rain. It's jet fuel. It's raining jet fuel.
No.
The refueling plane is spraying jet fuel, and you want me to jump into this? Yeah, look, I'll just hang out in the rear lavatory. I won't smoke. I'll just keep to myself. Yeah, I know the door's full of holes. Whatever. Will you help me take off this parachute? I'll go. Oh, my God. The refueling ship just burst into flames, and it's raining fiery snapperel.
Snapperel.
It's raining fiery snapple down on everyone. Oh, that seemed to warm Tiffany, intern Tiffany, up a little bit, though. And no, I won't be continuing my internship in the fall.
Right.
You made me laugh I don't even remember what the joke was. Oh, the men's warehouse joke. You made me laugh at a men's warehouse joke. Now,
back then, that guy was still okay, right?
He was all right.
George Zimmer.
Is he still okay? Right? I don't know. Is he messed up? Is he goofed?
He's in bad places now.
Oh,
it's by far the biggest problem of doing this show is I can't enjoy people who have since become terrible people.
I didn't know this about him at all.
You know what I mean? Like,
well, how about we talk about the people that became great people, like Lizelle Matthews, who played daughter Marshall. She she's a philanthropist, so she's no longer a.
She only did three things. One thing after this, and then that was it. She was like, I'm out.
She comes from one of the wealthiest families in America, and she's into philanthropy. Yeah.
And she didn't have a lot riding on her shoulders, but what she did do was great acting. I agree. Very impressed with that character.
I agree. I was really surprised when I looked her up and I went, what'd you go on to do? Oh, nothing. I mean, nothing in movies.
If you come from a super rich family, you can make that decision. You know, it's like, do I want to continue acting? Nah, I'll just go give some money away.
Yeah. Do I want to be churned up into this system known as Hollywood, or should I do other things?
And she made the right choice.
She got out safe. Yeah.
Thanks to the Sound of Music, I've always loved the name Liesel.
Liesel's a great name.
Liesel.
Yeah, I like Liesel as well.
Unless it's pronounced Liesel.
Yeah.
And then it's a whole different thing.
Well, at least it's been very popular this year. Yeah.
Does Liesel have a sister like
Vin Liesel?
Liesel.
Yeah. Vin Liesel. Yeah. 99%.
Lynn Liesel. That's it. Yeah.
Lynn Liesel. There you go. She's great. And I was a little bummed to see that she didn't go on to do anything, but then I found out what she does, and I think it's better. She's actually an acting high point in the film Air Force One. Is the movie we're talking about, a movie that was on streaming, Hulu in particular, right up until yesterday, where it was yanked unceremoniously on the first of the year.
Now that is true and not true all at the same time. You can watch this if you have AMC and if you have the Hulu live, the Hulu TV version.
Yeah. But you could see it before this, just regular old ass streaming before this. Like you could, as of last, let's see. When did I look at it? New Year's Eve. Kim and I were about to watch it, hit and play, and then something came up and we didn't watch it.
I wonder if it's because AMC was getting ready to air it that they pulled it. I think it's a really interesting question.
And it doesn't even help if you, because I was paying for AMC for a while, and I think I forgot to turn it off, but I remembered when I looked this up and said, oh, AMC, oh, but not till the 8th. I think Tim was watching one of the spinoff Walking Dead shows. But that doesn't even work. You have to have the combination of AMC and the extra Hulu Live.
It gets complicated, but good news, FilmSack viewers, you can buy the ultra high definition version of this for $4.99 to keep forever on Amazon. That's how I did it. It looked great, too.
It's a really good deal.
Way better than that stupid, what did we watch the other week? The
Oh, the abyss.
Destroyed. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
This is actually good. This is
a pan and scan grainy abyss.
Yeah, this looks good. And for $4.99, as opposed to the rental, and the same exact download was like $8 on Apple, and I think Vudu had it for more, and everybody had it for more. But for some reason, the Ultra HD version on Amazon was only $5. I was like, well, I'm buying this. Duh. Let's get this. This is great. I'll watch this again. My wife likes this movie. We all like this movie. But boy, howdy, do I have a very specific thing to say about this movie here in a second. But before I do, a quick note. Okay. George Zimmer, I think you're confusing with George Zimmerman, who shot that kid.
You know, George Zimmer, he had some like some issue where he lost the company. I know he's not the guy who shot Trayvon.
Not that
Martin
guy.
In Florida, wherever it was.
Because I can't find anything controversial about him other than he retired. Okay. That he's 72.
I could have sworn that there was some reason. I mean, he got fired.
Right. He was dismissed. He was dismissed for unspecified reasons, it says here.
Yeah.
And the company declined to offer any explanation. And then there was like some public back and forth where he just said purely generic things about how great he was.
Oh, here it is. I found it. Okay. June 2013, company responded to a public pressure for more information following its terse original statement. Stating a detailed explanation, this is what they said. The statement asserts that Zimmer insisted on full control of the public company. Neither the board nor the management desired a total breakdown of the relationship between Mr. Zimmer and the company. In our discussions with Mr. Zimmer, we made considerable efforts to find a solution that would allow him to continue to have a significant involvement in the men's warehouse company. Unfortunately, Mr. Zimmer wouldn't accept anything other than full control of the company. And the board was left with no choice but to terminate him as executive chairman. So basically, it's like I found with
all it's definitely not what I thought I remembered. I really honestly thought it was some sort of,
it looks like his like
hired children in Cambodia to make his suits.
It looks like when Zimmer got
insulted the Jewish community or something.
No. It looks like it was way more mystical. Like he got a bunch of money and decided, you know what? I'm going to hire Deepak Chopra. I'm going to take, I'm going to take large amounts of cannabis. You know what I mean? Like
really?
Yeah. It looks like he just did what every other, rich guy does. And this particular
I want it all.
No. Well, in this case, he was trying to assert control over a company he founded, which he no longer legally totally had control over. And I think they just it's like a movie almost. It's like you own a company and then somebody kicks you like Apple, like when they fired Steve Jobs in 85 or whatever it was. It's like, how do you even do that? How do you fire that guy?
Yeah, but still, you're not going to see this
trade publicly. That's how you do all that.
You're not going to see this scandal on American Crime Story.
No.
Like OJ.
Menendez
brothers. Now George Zimmer and his.
But where you will see it is that great show called Greed with Stacy Keach. You guys watch that?
No, but I like
only
Keach.
Have it on terrestrial TV where I have an antenna. And occasionally I'll be flipping around and Stacy Keach makes me smile. Wherever he talks.
Oh,
and and so he does a show called Greed, and it's always it sounds like almost like a Forensic Files kind of show, but it's just about greed.
No. So it's about being greedy.
Well, I'm kind of disappointed because I really thought there was something I could have sworn I remembered more dirt about George Zimmer than just he just wanted the full control over his company.
Well, so what we did is we saved ourselves a bunch of emails is what we did.
So right.
Yes, good. Thank you for
why doesn't why doesn't James
probably
Marshall
one from
off?
George Zimmer, and that's really all we would have gotten.
Yeah,
I guarantee it.
I guarantee it.
Why doesn't President Marshall want to get the freak off that plane? Why is he so I mean,
his family's on there.
They can't shove even after his family gets off. He still won't get off. They still can't shove him out. They had to literally kill everybody. And he's like, "Oh, guess I'm the last one out."
I appreciate your sharp attempt to swing us back to the film. But I need to make this one point about Washington while the plane stuff is happening. So more than ever, this viewing told me or taught me there are two movies happening. One. A competent action thriller in the Die Hard mold is happening up in the sky in a plane with President Marshall and the people and the whatnot. Okay, it's a good time up there. We're having a great time up there. Back in Washington,
meanwhile in Washington,
we are having a comedy shit show in Washington.
Yeah, I love it.
It's
our lead
horrible.
Is horrible. Oh come on, it's fantastic.
It is horrible.
Don't tell me you don't enjoy Dean Stockwell as Defense Secretary Walter Dean, who is almost in the precipice
I want him to be
of a coup.
I want him to pull out a cigar and start, you know, trying to raise Gushy on the
he's hitting Ziggy pocket calculator.
Yeah.
I want him to be a Cylon.
Gushy, get me out of here.
I want all sorts of Dean Stockwell things out of Dean Stockwell. But here's the thing. Dean Stockwell, great actor, love him. Glenn Close, an amazing actress, incredible career, Oscar nominated, wonderful lady. Probably going to get nominated this year for that Hillbilly Edgely thing or whatever it's called. She's really great. They're terrible there.
She's believable.
No, but she's not.
I think she's under.
No, I think she's overplayed. She's overplayed.
1997, I think this is what we would expect.
And by the way, don't forget Philip Baker Hall, who you see for like a split second, even though I feel like he's way better than this, way better than just a little brief cameo appearance. But tell me one thing that they did on the ground that had any effect on the progress of the, like, what did they
change? I'll tell you what they did on the ground. They let out the news to CNN so that CNN tipped off Gary Oldman's character that the president must still be somewhere on the plane. I was like,
So the White House is the crappy real genius teacher in Die Hard who goes and says, we miss our mommy and daddy. By the way, daddy's John McClane. He's in the building.
He's in the building right now.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Look at me, daddy.
That's exactly what happened. And to make it worse, here's why I think Glenn Close wouldn't sign that document from the cabinet members to basically force
that.
She did that. She avoided it. Not because she really believed in James Marshall or that she wanted to wait until, you know, she believed in the president. It's because she knew that they're a bunch of clowns who can't run shit. And they can't. She didn't want to take that power because that meant she was responsible. And then the Keystone Cops would run everything. They were terrible back in Washington. Mm-hmm. And every time they showed them, I wanted to poo a little bit, just a little bit of poo. I hated it.
All right. What's your favorite Die Hard on an X movie? Let's go.
I mean, this one.
I mean, your favorite. You're like,
this
you're gonna
may
go.
Be it.
That's is it for me.
You, I'm gonna no. I'm gonna make you go sit down and watch a Die Hard on an X movie. What are you gonna?
It's this one. Die Hard on a plane. I like this one.
Beverly Hills Cop 3. Die Hard in amusement park.
That's a good one. This one isn't even my favorite Die Hard on a plane movie. That would be Con Air.
Yeah, or Die Hard on a plane, which was two. I guess right. Two was Die Hard on a plane.
No, that was in an airport.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, Bonnie Bedelia was the only one in the plane. She just tased. That same guy that I was just talking about.
There's passengers of 57.
I actually think in the Die Hard on an X list, Paul Blart Mall Cop is wild.
I didn't think about that, but that does.
Yeah. I have never seen any of those movies, and I just worry that it's what I think it's going to be.
They're exactly what you think. They're fun. I enjoyed them. Well, I mean,
if they're exactly what I think they're going to be, then they're not fun.
They're fun. Kevin James is a big, silly beast of a man, and he's just, I think he's funny. It makes me laugh. Now, I don't sit there and, you know, hold my belly chuckling like Santa, but I mean, I do enjoy, I turn it on and I enjoy it. It's silly. I mean, nothing's funnier than seeing Kevin James ride around on a stupid Segway. Anytime Kevin James tries to ride or fit in something he can't fit, it's just like the cats who try to fit in everything. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
It just makes
but I don't
laugh.
Know if I'd go with the sentence, smile. Nothing's funnier than. I think there are things that are funnier than that.
Well, yeah,
you describing holding your belly and laughing like Santa actually is funnier than.
How about nothing's more comforting than watching that to me? It's kind of like, oh, this is very comforting. There's nothing wrong in the world today.
I say all this and I actually really like Kevin James. I'm not on that. I'm not on the hater bandwagon. I enjoy him.
I like Kevin James, but I just don't feel like Paul Blart Mall Cop is going to be.
Well, if you like hillbilly humor, you'll love Nom.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah, you know my affinity. chuckling yokels.
You're setting yourself up for a good time. Like, if you lower your expectations enough, you're going to really like the movie.
Yeah.
The other Die Hard on a Blah movie that I wanted to raise was the film that we sacked years and years ago, Hard Rain.
Yeah.
It's Die Hard in a church filled with stolen money or something like
Die
that.
Die Hard in a bad thunderstorm is what in a flood.
Well, it's
right?
It's Die Hard in the rain is what it is, basically. Yeah. Die Hard with heavy rain.
Die Hard, Hard Rain.
Yeah,
hard, that's perfect. Hard Rain.
We also saw another one. Passenger 57 was a good example of this. Also on a plane, but
I mean, and they use that same. The only two times I've ever been aware that there is a little elevator that goes between the levels were it was Halle Berry and Harrison Ford. Taking that little elevator.
Isn't that great? In this movie, I didn't even question it because, you know, he disappears at one point in time from the terrorists who were chasing him. And I was like, if I hadn't seen the other movie, I would have been like, how do you do that?
Yep.
But I know that there's like a little, you know, a little elevator between the two. And I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought of that as well. That's so funny that you bring that up because immediately my brain went to that. There's also Die Hard on a battleship, which Under Siege would probably count as Die Hard on a ship.
Yep.
Die Hard on a train then, Under Siege 2.
Yeah.
Know sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Speed is the probably Die Hard on a bus, right?
Sort of. Die Hard on a cruise ship.
Yeah.
Let us not forget that Executive Decision came out before this. The movie Executive Decision, everybody?
Yeah, we
saw it together. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was shocked when I looked that up because as this movie was kind of first getting started, I'm like, oh, look at this amazing coincidence that he just gave an off-the-cuff speech about how we're not going to succumb to terrorists. And then, the terrorists immediately join him on his aircraft. Right. And I was like, that's Executive Decision must have just copied all of this. No.
Yeah.
This copied that?
Oh, yeah.
Whoa, that's weird.
How, but not, I mean, the two are pretty close in time. I mean, sure, that one came out first, but like it had to be apart. Like a year before.
Yeah, it's like a year apart, I think, something like that. But it did surprise me because in my head, that order's backwards. I have it the other way.
Yeah.
But chronologically, it didn't work.
It might be backwards because I saw this at the theater and I didn't see Executive Decision until later. So in my mind, I did watch it that way. So
that's actually what I ended up doing. I don't think I saw Executive Decision in theaters. But this, I
wasn't rushing out to see Executive Decision, by the way.
Here's the thing. This movie, which I haven't mentioned yet, directed by Wolfgang Petersen, a guy's work I enjoy. I always enjoy one of his movies here and there. This film, whenever they do like a who's the best president, who would you elect of all the movie presidents? There's like this poll.
Oh, yeah.
And he always wins. He's won every time. The only person to come close is dude from Independence Day. President, what's his name?
He's just got an unmemorable name. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, he's a.
I always call him President Solo. So, I mean, it's all good.
Yeah,
I don't need a name.
Yeah.
I got
President
it.
Jones. There you go.
I think a big part of that is that he is the main character badass. There's really not a lot of movies that portray the president. First of all, giving the president a lot of screen time, right? Usually in movies, the president is this the behind closed doors person, but like also a lot of screen time and he kills people and he fights and so on. Like that's just really, really rare. I'm kind of surprised there aren't other movies that.
Well, part of it is I think it is a very much park your brain at the door kind of idea. Sure, you can say, well, he served in Vietnam and he saved all these people and he was a pilot there and so now he's seen war. He knows what it's about and all this. And so you can kind of get your head behind that, but it does ask a lot of us to assume that
I always have trouble with this when I see a older person portraying themselves as someone who learned how to fight in Vietnam. Going against someone who has more recent training and is like, 20 or 30 years younger than them.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's just not going to
happen.
Yeah,
but Harrison Ford has always done old guy strength really well.
Yeah.
Like he's in his mid to late 50s here, by the way. He looks amazing for his 50s.
Yeah.
But when he does that like fugitive style face, and just there's a certain like chaos to the way he fights that makes it better. Like to me, it's like this is you fighting for your very essence, not a pre-choreographed swing fest. You know, I'm going to knock you out Arnold style. It's something more than that. And that always sells him for me. So that I can get over that hump that you just mentioned, because that is a hump.
Well, I believed it when he finally knocks people out with like a chair or something. I'm like, okay, Dirty Pool, I got you. You can do that. That's absolutely an acceptable way to beat someone who is younger than you.
Yeah.
But just fisticuffs straight to straight. I mean, unless you're just some kind of assassin, and why would you be president if you were that?
Well, and I want to go back to Scott's biggest point earlier, because I think this holds through the whole film. The the ridiculous things that happen on the plane don't bother me at all. I don't think that I think as an audience, like, that's what we're there for. But for some reason, the ridiculous things that happen back in the Situation Room in Washington, I can't stand. I'm like, no, they would not. No. And they wouldn't do that either. And it's like, wait a minute. Why am I suspending disbelief so easily on the one, right, but not the other? And the answer is Harrison Ford. It's just Harrison Ford. Yeah. He's just like, I am going to go with whatever stupid stuff he does. You know what I mean? Like, oh, he just choked a guy out and then just left him sleeping. Okay.
Yeah, for not very long. That bothered me. I was like, dude, you better better kill him because he'll back up in a few minutes.
At least tie his hands behind his back or something. Cause,
right.
Yeah. Cause but he could just be playing too. Like you get choked like that. Go limp. Yeah. Like, okay, I guess he must be unconscious. I'm just going to leave him and go do something else.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, back in Washington, some people say some things about, you know, like that slightly contradict whatever I saw on the West Wing or Veep. And I'm just like, right. Oh, bad movie.
It was very West Wing on the ground for me. Not nearly as entertaining, but they had that whole let's walk and talk. And
it was like a bad version of the West Wing on the ground.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
And it's unfortunate because I do think that your backup, your, you know, meanwhile, you know, it's usually like what's his name? Morgan Freeman is usually the guy back at home, you know, dealing with whatever, like he was in those also Die Hard like movies, the Olympus Has Fallen and stuff. And you can count on them to be freaked and trying to run things the best they can and making these hard decisions. But in this one, it just came off as watching Three Stooges. Like every time it would cut to them, it would be this serious thing happen on the plane and they'd be like, poking each other in the eye and just looking, oh, we don't know what to do. I'm in charge here. No, I'm in charge. Terrible. I mean,
is that to increase our concern for the president? Like, oh God, he can't die. We can't. Yeah,
look who he's going to leave in command if something happens to him.
And by the way, the entirety of our concern is based on that idea that the president is very, very important. And I don't mean the presidency. I mean,
not the office. In the office, man is
somehow like the most important thing, and the movie does a great job, in my opinion, of keeping that, of holding it up and not dropping it. But when I step back away from it, I'm just like, oh, Glenn Close could do that job. This is not a big deal, you know. Right. Like, it's very clear to me that in reality, right? I definitely don't think that the president, the man, is like so terribly valuable. But I don't know what this movie did. How did this movie make me think that his life was so damn important? Yeah.
Yeah. He
didn't think it was very important compared to everybody else's. So kind of why should we all? Yeah,
that was pissing me off. That was pissing me off. That's the kind of thing that's a character flaw. It's what? Like,
care about other people more than yourself. What do you mean?
Yeah. And when you're in the position that you are the most important asset we have, and you keep wanting to throw it away, and we keep going, no, dummy, you need to get to safety because it's more than you.
The vice president has the line, which really stuck with me, where she says he doesn't have the right to risk himself like that.
Right.
And I was like, whoa, wow, yeah, I guess that's true, right? Like,
I mean, like, is it though? Like,
the noble thing, yes, is to put your family before yourself. But you have to also look at, all right, what kind of stuff happens if a terrorist takes out the president? What does that do to any other wannabe terrorists out there? What does it do for the appearance of our country? What does it do for the actual running of our country?
It's also based on nothing. You don't know that he's going to follow through on his end, which he absolutely didn't. He immediately says, I'm sorry, I lied or whatever. You're totally right about all that, but I do want to say, okay, I'm going to say I agree with you guys, but I want to say the movie earned it because of this.
Absolutely.
Harrison Ford gave, in that moment, what I believe to be, to this day, after seeing it again, I reconfirmed it in my mind, the best performance he's ever given in that moment.
Oh,
he was really, really something right
when he has to turn about face when he's telling Gary Oldman, you can't, I don't negotiate. Nope. I've been saying it this whole movie. I'm not negotiating.
And he gets and all broken up. He's like, he realizes this daughter he's talking about, this gun to the head. Like anybody with kids can relate to this. Like there's this moment there where I went, oh my gosh, freaking Harrison Ford. I didn't know you had this in you, dude. Like that really,
it was good.
I disagree with you on one little, like where you say the best, like for me, he will never do anything that was better than his acting in The Fugitive. I think that is the pinnacle of his career. But this is number two. This is right.
What about the look on his face when Kylo Ren stabs him?
What about regarding Henry, Randy?
What about regarding
Henry? Yeah, I think regarding Henry is actually bad. Like,
really?
I think
I like regarding Henry. I like that.
Yeah, I do too.
And The Force Awakens, right? It's so fraught. So it's really hard to.
I guess what I'm saying is just as a single moment, not an overall performance, because I think you're probably right about The Fugitive overall, like from top to bottom. But as a single standout moment in any film he's ever been in, some of the best ones like Witness and others, like this really stood out in what is otherwise just kind of popcorn good fun. Like there's nothing about this movie was nominated for best editing in a year where all the other editing awards or nominations went to best picture nominations. This thing was never going to be bound to win much more than something like that. But there's just that moment. And I just thought, well, man, Harrison Ford, can you pull this out more often and show us your, show us your acting wiener?
Chops.
Yeah. Cause it was it really got
show
me
us your like, Ford.
It was
show
emotional. It my wife got a little choke sitting next to me. She watched this one with me but she's a sucker for this. When he said, get off my plane, she went, "Whoa!" Like that.
Yeah. That is like everybody it's hard not to watch things leading up to that. And when he says, get off my plane, not to go, "Woo!" You can't avoid it.
Yeah. It's a fun time though, man. I just had so much fun with this movie.
I'll tell you, we haven't talked about Gary Oldman's performance, but I mean, from the get go, as soon as you see him, you're like, oh, he's the bad guy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've never seen this movie before, as soon as Gary Oldman walks up, it's like, oh, there he is.
He's great.
There's our
foil. He's great in it. And, he's so great in
it. He's great. And he brings this thing that makes you sympathize somewhat. You're both mad at yourself and mad at the terrorists. And it's like, oh, but he's right. You know, we did this and we did that. And oh, here's our, you know, we're finally sowing what we, you know, we're reaping what we sow. And it's kind of like, that's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard.
By the way, Air Force One and The Fifth Element, same year. So busy dude that year.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Air Force One was much better in this one.
Yeah. Didn't need that plastic cover thing on it. But he was like, they called him Scary Oldman on the set because he was the friendliest, nicest guy. They joke around and stuff. There's this note here.
Yeah.
Where is it? Maybe I didn't put it in. But anyway, there was this conversation. There was a conversation back and forth with him and Harrison Ford all the time that was very jovial, good time, working out their scenes together. And then Harrison Ford, he said he would snap suddenly and just turn into that scary old man. And it would really freak everybody out because he was so intense. And then he would loosen up again.
I like knowing that because I always wondered if he was one of those that stayed in character, like was method actor and stayed in character during cameras are off. No, I'm going to go over here and eat my food. You leave me alone. Go away. You know, but I like knowing that he's a genuine down to earth, nice guy in between.
Yeah. And also just such a damn fine actor and so sells this role, even though it's so over the top and could be fraught with like, every crappy Russian terrorist stereotype that you could think of. And yet I think rises above all that.
And it just comes off. I don't think that this would have been cast this way nowadays. Mm. Like, I think this is kind of a relic at this point that you put an Englishman, just an old school Englishman in the role of, you know, a Balkan state terrorist. You know what I mean? Like like now you would find somebody that better fit the look and feel and didn't have to put on a stupid accent. You know, like I throughout the movie, I just kept looking at Gary Oldman and saying, come on, be serious black for me. I like you as serious black.
There was nobody in the late 90s that was, I'll list a few things. He was Zorg in The Fifth Element.
Yeah.
Air Force One, of course, here. Yeah. Dr. Smith, ultimate bad guy in Lost in Space.
Lost in Space.
Here's his pinnacle role in 1999. Pontius Pilate in Jesus, the TV miniseries.
I remember that. I watched that. He just eats up everything he does. And in this particular case, I agree with you, Randy, they probably would. But it's funny because all of his henchmen were actual Baltic state, Eastern Russian, you know, descent, except him. Like, he's the only one that isn't. And you probably would hire differently. Like, I would have put Peter Stormare in charge of this group or something.
I think that'd be good.
But he's Swedish.
I think Gary Oldman gets this role directly from his performance in The Professional. Like he's the heavy, he's the bad guy in The Professional.
Yeah.
Was he Russian in that one, accent-wise?
No, he's just an American. He was English, I guess. He played British,
British. Yeah.
It's that one where he goes, "Everyone!" That face he makes. So good. So good. We got to watch The Professional, by the way. We need to do that.
Yeah, that would be a good one to watch. He was in True Romance as kind of like a weird Rastafarian gang leader, wasn't he?
I'm trying to remember.
And like for me, at least in my experience, he burst onto the scene as Lee Harvey Oswald in that terrible JFK movie.
Whoa,
JFK.
Terrible. Slow down.
Absolutely the worst thing that Oliver Stone ever did.
Slow down there for a second.
Slow your roll.
Yeah, we need to discuss this for a second. I don't think it's an accurate film or historically on point or anything, but I love JFK. That thing is an amazing movie. We are on two different planets.
How much of that is because you love Kevin Costner?
That's a big part of it, but I also love everybody else in it, including a small cameo from John Candy, an amazing performance by Tommy Lee Jones. Kevin Bacon shows up in that thing.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
I miss when Tommy Lee Jones was in every film. I miss those days.
Dude, there's a part where who's the coach in the... I can't think of his damn name. But anyway, this is some of these names. Oh, I know who I'm thinking of. Walter Matthau. Walter Matthau plays a senator in that thing. Freaking Edward Asner. Ed Asner's in that thing. Sally Kirkland. These are amazing people. Jack Lemmon. Incredible role in there.
Amazing people.
Like amazing old and new actors. People from cross generations of acting all coming together to be in a conspiracy movie that doesn't have a ton of legs to stand on. And then Kevin Costner at his height. You're crazy. You're insane. I love this movie. All right, I've defended myself. I rest my case.
Have you though?
Plus it got parodied on Seinfeld, so it has to be good.
Yeah, it has to be good. To front, to the back, or no? How's it go? To
back and to the left.
To the left.
They're real and they're spectacular.
Yeah.
wrong quote. Oh,
yeah. I think Oliver Stone is a fantastic filmmaker. I think he's like one of the one of the top 50 of all time, filmmakers.
Yeah.
And I will absolutely go there with you for movies like Platoon or Natural Born Killers or The Doors. Absolutely. Even I'll even say Born on the 4th of July is a really good movie. This particular movie, JFK, it may as well be Oliver Stone making an episode of InfoWars with Alex Jones, and like I can't forgive it. It doesn't matter how much good acting is in it. It is based on abject lunacy, and it's an insult to your intelligence. And you shouldn't watch it.
Like, you're an insane.
I've never seen it, and now I must watch it.
Yeah, you need to see it. It's awesome. Durandy is crazy. He's a crazy person, and he is. It's an amazing film that should be seen by everybody. And almost,
I mean, this is exactly like the big problem with all of humanity in the internet age is that conspiracy theories are so easy to promulgate, and people who don't know better and can't look at them critically are just eating them up and turning around and sharing them with others.
Well, then they're like dummies. Look, but some of us can watch movies made in 1993 and not go, I believe this has turned me around. I'm gonna get my guns and freaking defend myself from the people who killed you.
I don't think those people who are giving you trouble about their conspiracy theories are pulling it from the JFK movie. They're pulling it from the History Channel, where they've watched all these alien and conspiracy shows. They're not getting JFK. They're not getting that. That's for us who are smart enough to go,
I mean, I get it. I get where you're coming from, and I get, like, misinformation. What's coloring this is we live in the age of like horrendous misinformation, and now it's kind of easy to go back in time and go, this, and this. These are all forms of, you could interpret this as misinformation.
I challenge you to ask anyone on Facebook, where you've probably seen these conspiracy theorists, ask them if they've ever seen JFK the movie, and ask them what they think about it.
Well, they probably have.
And I'm pretty sure they'll go, no, never saw it.
Oh, really? You think?
I think those people
don't watch it.
Of course, I've seen it.
Yeah, that's another one.
Ask them if they watch the History Channel. Yeah. With aliens versus what is the stupid show? Alien and Prophets or something.
It's what's the it called? First thing I think of when you say the History Channel is that meme of the dude with the whacked out hair going.
The whacked out hair. Because yeah. That's what they're watching. I've yeah. talked to these people. I live near these people. I live around these people. Sure. These are the people.
Here's what I'm saying. If the movie can be viewed in from the lens of, is it making a mountain out of a molehill in terms of its source material? Yes, 100%. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it really well made? Yes, 100%. I can watch stuff like that and not suddenly go, oh, wait a minute. Everything I thought I knew was a lie. The whole thing was from, that's for idiots. And those idiots have always been around. So I don't know how you get around this. Like without telling people you can't do a thing. Like someone turning around saying, I'm sorry, Oliver Stone, you cannot make the movie about the thing you want to because somebody out there might dislike it or might take it too seriously. I can't live in that world. People have got to be able
really,
to make
it. It really is the big controversy of the 21st century. How do we stop people's brains from being poisoned and that poison from spreading? Like I don't have the answer because we're talking about free speech.
Yeah.
And there's just like, how do we stop it? Like, what if it just leads straight to the end of the species? I don't know. I don't know how to stop it.
Yeah. That's the problem. If you think it is, and not talking about this movie in particular, because
this is nothing new. Okay. Don't let any of this thing. Our politicians have gotten into a place where they're all saying that this is the worst it's ever been. This is the most extreme it's ever been. And none of that's true. None of that's true.
Yeah.
There's been extremism way before now, and we are in a very moderate time, even though it feels like we're in a very tumultuous time. We're not. We're very moderate. So, don't let this fear-mongering that's going on out there telling everything is the extremism.
What it is we're all connected in a way we've never been before, and therefore everything gets amplified. And then that in itself could be dangerous. There's no question about it. But I, like Randy says, what do you do? Like,
yeah,
I don't want to say there can't be rules that say I'm sorry if nobody can make a film about JFK's assassination. That's just the rules. I don't want to live in that world either.
No, so, that's it. That's going the exact opposite direction.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. All right, got some scrutiny. Let's do some scrutiny here. Hold on. Wait, where is it? Right here.
Scrutiny.
Okay. Initially, director Wolfgang Peterson was denied access to the real-life Air Force One. A telephone call from Harrison Ford to the White House soon changed that.
Yeah. Come on, man. Let me look at the plane.
I mean, do you
come
think
on,
he really called Bill plane. Clinton and said, Bill, can we use the real plane? And Bill said, well, I'm sure. I'm just getting to BJ.
Who is this again? Donut. Harrison Ford?
Yeah.
Just, like, don't open the third drawer in the cabinet.
Harrison Ford Harrison Ford's a real pilot. And so I wonder.
Oh, you think that
I wonder if it went further.
The president?
Yeah, I wonder which went further, if it was in tandem, his celebrity or his, you know, his
connections. I don't know. Here's a good one for Randy, because I know he likes Randy Newman. So do you, Ibbitt. You're fans, right? Fans of Randy Newman?
Yeah.
Additional scrutiny, though. Says Randy Newman was originally hired to provide the film's score. However, Wolfgang Peterson felt it was too serious to the point of being unintentionally funny. Jerry Goldsmith, our most prolific film sack composer.
You better get off my plane.
I knew this was going to happen if I brought
it. Give you a parachute and wrap cord around your neck, and then you're going to get off my plane.
That's all I can think when you say Randy Newman. It's the only thing I can think.
True story.
It's like it's so iconic. His music for Major League basically is what comes to mind. Right? Like, how could that apply?
Really,
to Air Force
I just
One
think of Toy
way.
Story. That's all I think of when I think.
That's all I can think of too. Yeah. I know he's done great instrumental work, but all I can think of is that he'd have some vocal song.
Yeah, what that voice is. But Jerry Goldsmith, guy we've seen a billion times on this show, comes in, gets hired last minute, 12 days to come up with an alternative, did it. Now here's the scrutiny part. Newman later recycled much of his rejected score for Toy Story 3. I don't believe it.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
It's all interchangeable, right? I mean, you know, this, action adventure film in the sky and children's Pixar movie.
Sure. I feel like this needs to be the episode of Film Sack where every piece of trivia is
lying. Where we scrutinize
everyone.
Well, you might be right. Here's another one. We were talking about Kevin Costner. The lead role was written for him, but he was heavily committed to The Postman, also came out that year, and that he suggested Harrison Ford for the part. Additional scrutiny, please. When did this conversation happen where Kevin Costner's like, I'd really like to be on this plane movie, but you know
he should get his Harrison Ford. I think he has a direct line to Bill Clinton, so he could probably get the Air Force, the actual Air Force One.
Right? Like, what a weird thing. But I could see Kevin Costner in this role, no problem. Could totally do it.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. So that part seems right to me. But
God, has he played a president? I'm trying to think if he's ever.
Is it right?
Ah, that's a good question. He is presidential, but
he's presidential, but has he played a president?
I can't think of any.
I'm looking.
I mean, the only time he worked for the federal government was in The Postman, right? I think that was the only time I.
Nope. He was special assistant to the president in 13 Days.
Oh, he was a bodyguard once.
Swing vote. He was. He was just like a.
The deciding factor between two.
I thought he was. Was he? Was he? Was he just the deciding factor between the votes, or was he like a? Oh yeah, he was. He really was just a.
Oh, yeah.
He really was just the guy who was going to decide the election because of his vote.
Yeah. You're right.
I thought that was all supposed to be the thing.
I never saw that.
I didn't either. Yeah, but that's right. Either.
No, okay. One time president. Because he seems like he should be a guy who played the president. He never played the president.
You know what it is? It's all the Jack Ryan times. We're just thinking of those.
Yeah.
Because he's in the president's room hanging out and stuff. And apparently, by the way, he pushed real hard to get. He wanted this to be PG-13 real bad. Harrison Ford did. And
how bad did he want it? Like your pee bad? Like, it's gotta be
bad.
Oh,
I guess bad enough that he campaigned with the studio over and over and over to do it. And they thought he was going to get it done because this worked with Clear and Present Danger, according to the trivia. And they changed their rating from R to PG-13. So he thought he could do it here. And I, for one, am glad it failed because I prefer the
level of
take.
Harrison Ford influence is can see Air Force One, cannot change ratings.
Right. Cannot change ratings or fly a plane.
Interesting.
Properly without crashing into a park and then
done pretty good except for that one time.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the perfect example of sometimes what once was R is now kind of PG-13.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly why I feel that. I guess I just didn't know this was rated R and until you just brought it up just right now.
Yeah.
And I wasn't thinking of it as adults only.
Right.
Man,
right.
Do you see them titties? You know, like I just didn't
I mean it was wow. pretty violent, you know? I mean, there was some pretty real intense moments, I guess, and that's where most of it comes from. Not the language.
Yeah, the headshot of the press secretary in front of the wife and child of the president's kind of even though it's shown off screen, you hear it and you hear the scream. Right. It's like,
you see the bullet hole appear in his head, but they kind of quickly go away.
The press secretary lady was a totally.
I guess maybe she's just
Deserved
tour guide.
Melanie deserved what she got because she started off with like, hello, terrorist. Here is everything about Air Force One you'll ever need to know.
Yeah. Here's the keypad. If you ever need to use it, the code is 4-5.
And I'm like, loose lips sink ships, Melanie. Yeah.
Sink
Come
planes.
On.
Loose planes. No, how do you rhyme it with planes? Help me here.
Right.
Loose
brains sink planes.
There you go.
Blow damn, up Brian, look at you with the fast whip out of the brain.
Boom.
That was good.
I used to work with Johnny Cochran. I have a
tattoo. Oh, well, then, now it all makes sense.
But you got to acquit if they don't fit. So, yeah. Donna Bullock.
If it doesn't acquit, you must fit. Is that what he's saying?
Right. Don't have a fit. We're going to acquit. Xander Berkeley, by the way, is you remember that guy from 24, the series with you remember that guy? And then he's like the turn guy, right? He's the guy that betrays his country. And I wanted to know more, and they never really gave it to us.
I really genuinely 100% believed that was Christopher Negroni.
I
spent the whole movie thinking, you're going to be a tough cop on TV later. You
right.
Like, I am shocked that wasn't that Christopher Negroni guy.
Negroni? Mm. Who's Christopher Negroni? Who is that? Agent. I can't think of who that is. Christopher Negroni. Hold on.
Mick Roney.
Do I not have his name right?
Maloney. The Law and Order Special Victims Unit. So you're thinking of that guy.
Yeah.
They have a very similar vibe for sure. But
Negroni's a cocktail, isn't it? And it's making me thirsty.
I want a Negroni. Here's the thing about Xander Berkeley and about that role. And this is my biggest complaint about the movie. So this is a situation where this guy's the inside reason that the terrorists can even do anything. He took out the guard dudes. Now the guns are open. Now they can, you know, basically take over. And if it wasn't for him, they couldn't have done that. Now, throughout the rest of the film, he basically plays dumb and acts like he's still part of the good guys and doesn't need to do anything except sort of look suspicious.
He's biding his time, right?
But in the end, why didn't he? He should have just escaped with everybody else because now he's off the hook. Anyone who can implicate him is dead. Right. So why did he still do it? What was his motivation?
I don't know. He's Agent Gibbs. So I was trying to figure out why he had to wait until after everybody left, including the president, because he didn't attempt to kill the president again or to show himself until he found out that was the last zip line over. And he's like, oh, forget that crap.
Oh, was there only one zip line left? Is that the?
The pilot said
time for one more zip.
Right.
One more back and forth.
Okay, then what you've done now is answered my question then, because what I thought he just suddenly went, and now I will reveal myself. I didn't connect that.
Yes, us two. And William H. Macy must die for no reason at all.
You got to love, though, the planes going up and down, and poor Paul Guilfoyle.
I laughed out loud when he was like reaching out and pulling back the other way.
Talk about, you know, pretty good special effects, good green screening, but there was a couple of moments where they had people just in dark sky moments that made me laugh. His zip lining across was quite funny because he's in such a weird position. Also, just the facts lady. Her being happy while getting away on the parachute made me laugh. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, exactly.
It'd be very easy to forget about the fax lines, and then she's all like, "Me."
And you know, I alluded to this in my intro, but it's like -10 degrees up there. There's no air. People who parachute from above cloud line have to have an oxygen mask and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know how she could look so happy when she A was freezing and B couldn't.
Right.
Yeah, she was stoked.
She was out.
She was like, I did the fax thing. I'm out. And she got out of there.
I've done my job.
I did my duty.
So I'm going to be the new Postmaster General.
That's true. That was the promise. If this is true, I'll make you which would be great because I haven't seen my USPS package in almost a week now.
Oh, yeah. We could use her. We could use her. She'd be great.
Yeah, we could use her.
Louis DeJoy, take off. We got a new lady coming in. She's ready to roll.
Right.
Anyway, the thing with the dude at the agent bit now makes more sense to me. I still think it's a little
thin. It's very thin. It was unnecessary. It was really unnecessary.
What do you think was in it for him?
He's either really dumb or just so angry at the president that he's got to blow his cover.
But it was pretty funny with him like in the plane at the doorway going, no, what have I done?
Again, they have no idea how air suction and stuff works. Like you've seen movies where even a small crack in a window.
Right. And they're pretty low. How many feet were they supposed to be? So, I mean,
10,000 feet still.
It was well below 10,000 feet. They were like 400 feet above the ocean and they had slowed down considerably. I thought it
was 10,000 because William Macy was like, okay, it's 10,000 feet there. We got it. It's time to let you go.
No, that was like 10 minutes worth of dialogue prior when he said that before they sit there and had to like pontificate what they were going
to
do.
I am paying attention to altitude, Wade, he said at one point.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, but that stuff was pretty loose. They were also the pod. Yeah. The pod doesn't exist. There is no pod, escape pod in these planes.
I was curious about that. I do like the idea there being a pod.
There has to be a
little presidential escape pod.
Nope,
absolutely.
Not such a thing. Been any sense, but there was all this controversy at the time. Everybody asking everybody. And everybody with any familiarity with Air Force One is like,
they're going to say there's not an escape pod on Air Force One.
I bet you there's no pod.
Harrison Ford hooked him up, and And Wolfgang got the tour. He said, oh, there's the pod.
I think there was a pod. We'd know there was a pod, and therefore those terrorists would know there was a pod, and they didn't know there was a pod.
I think there's a lot of things going on there. Like Air Force One definitely would not have those. They would always be a station guard at any weapons cache.
They
like
were. They were all sitting Air there, Force and he One. Shot them all up. Those are
no,
the
just A.J. Gibbs. No, he kind of, no, there would have been, there's way more protection than that. And plus, I don't think you would, I don't know. There was just so many things. I'm sure anybody who's worked in Air Force One is like going,
they right. farted.
There's a whole huge list of this is anachronistic about planes in general and Air Force One in specific on TV tropes. There's this huge list. And
Go ahead.
I just like, for me, the hardest part to believe is that all the shooting does no real damage to the plane. Yeah.
They all shoot straight down the fuselage. So I kind of, it's like maybe, mm-hmm. but no. Still okay. Very dangerous, right, Randy?
So are you going to tell me that they made up all that Perrier and Ocean Spray and milk too? Like there's not really that much milk on the plane that nobody ever is going to drink before it all spoils.
Oh my gosh, those beautiful refrigerators. I just wanted to spend right. some time down there just like browsing through all the food.
You know,
there's a bunch of things. Like for instance, planes don't use colored wires because you'd be crazy to do that.
So no red, white, and blue?
You might have mechanics who are colorblind.
That red, white, and blue thing was so dumb.
They use wires that are written on, you know?
Right. Mm. Like do not cut.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Even got a piece of masking tape that says important.
Right.
It was almost like the movie was like, you know what, we need to do three major tropes. One is the wiring, and let's be funny and make it red, white, and blue because whoever made this plane was obviously, oh, it's America. We're doing red, white, and blue wires. And then, hey, how about we have a guy dive in front of the president and take a bullet, and then later have a plane dive in front of the president and take a bullet. That was so – I laughed harder last night at that than I've laughed at anything in months.
Yeah, yeah.
That cracked me up so hard. I forgot all about it.
There's one thing in this film that I hate in storytelling in general, especially in movies, where this is something that never happens in real life. You don't have a problem that you're working on trying to figure out and then notice like, oh, look, this milk was shot and it's losing milk fuel. I should release the fuel. That's not how our brains jump from here to there. I know that you could go, well, you know, Newton got hit on the head by Apple. That's how it's like. No, that's a story. That's a story. No, this is not how the human brain works. You don't solve one problem in this manner. Not
I am such an idiot that I did not. I was trying to figure out, well, why is he looking at the milk like that? And how is that? And I keep waiting for that to pay off. And I just now when you said that, I was like, oh, yeah, thinking about the fuel. Okay.
That's not how the human mind solves problems. No, I did not.
I'm an idiot. I did not make that connection until you just said that.
Well, let me tell you how the human mind does solve problems. He comes up with this idea that if they would shoot a missile at the plane, it wouldn't disable the plane. It would just rock the plane, and he needed the plane to get rocked because that would make the terrorist's job a lot harder. Guess what I would have done? I would have said, all right, I need you guys to shoot a missile every 2 minutes now
until
this is resolved. You know, I don't understand why we only shoot the one missile one time. That just, I don't know.
Why do it? Yeah, why do it?
Yeah.
Oh, I got a chick in the bucket. I don't. Correct me. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I thought all the chickens took the zipline. All right, good.
No, the chick in the bucket to me was the guy carrying the football. The nuclear codes.
They showed
him. They showed him somebody as important as him, and then they just wiped him away later on. It's like they didn't tell me what happened to him. But they did just like go, oh, well, he's pointless now. We changed all the codes.
No, that's a perfect call.
That's
I didn't even think about it. He came. That is a very important job. And he shows up.
Right. I mean, it's so important. You got to handcuff that thing to your arm.
Yes. But then as soon as on the ground, they change the nuclear codes. You are the most dispensable, useless person
right.
with a dumb briefcase attached to your wrist.
You're the dummy
ever.
With it.
No. That's job security.
I thought, go ahead.
That's a human job.
I thought way too much about that. Like, okay, so they just changed the codes. Now who has them? Who's the
who's the new guy?
Quarterback now? Right. Like I was just like, the movie's going on, and I'm sitting there going, okay, so I guess they assigned the vice president the security. of the nuclear.
Right.
But do they do that before they invoke the 25th? They're like, just like, man, I need freaking, what's his name? Aaron Sorkin to tell me. I need
this is true. He's great at that.
Yeah. So and what was I just going to say about that? Oh, when she tore up the document with all the signatures and put it back in the file, all I could think of was how much money that's worth.
Yeah.
Like, if this was a real incident, right?
During such an iconic time in American history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be like having.
It does point out the fact that there are a lot of people on the cabinet who want to see the president replaced.
Yeah.
That thing was full of signatures.
She could, give me that. I'll sign that. Yeah.
What that tells me is those
aren't loyal appointees at all. Like, they're just all.
Yeah.
Like,
no, there's a lot of dissent among the.
What was interesting. I thought they didn't get a chance to explore. I'm like, oh, well, maybe they're, a one party that does not. Is not really in power. They're just in the executive branch and the rest of the branches are occupied by another party. And maybe that's the whole thing. She's afraid to relinquish or to take that control because she would be up against it.
That's true. What'd you guys think?
Aaron Sorkin.
What'd you think of the sweet plane crash tech we had?
A lot more, man. Special effects.
That looks so bad. And I don't remember it looking that bad. I have to admit, I thought, we go. We're going to see some sweet 90s stuff. And it was bad.
Yeah.
I was a little impressed. I was actually surprised at how good it was for the time. I had my expectations so low. And then when the plane finally crashes into the ocean, which I, was expecting, I was looking forward to it. It was all right. It wasn't that bad. It didn't need to be in the movie. Ultimately, right. If I had been making the movie in 97, I would have said, okay, let's cut that. Let's just have a huge explosion of water and that'll be enough. I don't need to see,
Yeah, it could be done. I mean, all I could think of is like, man, that would look so cool today. Like,
here's a question. Now. Yeah. I watched it in UHD on a 4K TV. Randy, did you get the UHD in watching in 4K? I mean, I wonder if that leads somewhat to the reason why I was disappointed because it just didn't look good. Maybe I saw too much.
I'm sure that's a part of it, but I watched it. I got the 4K version, but I had to watch it on in a windowed mode on a computer screen because I'm
capturing stuff. I watched on my cell phone in the toilet.
Yeah.
Stuff. I rented it before I saw your post about it being $4.99 on Amazon. Yeah. Damn it. I would have gotten that one.
Yeah. Right.
So.
It was an extra buck is all. Can you believe there's only a dollar difference between the rental?
A dollar difference. I know. Yeah. Wish I would have seen that.
It's a bummer.
I watched it in 1080p. That was the.
Still good. That's HD. Yeah.
It still looks like shit is the point.
And yes, it does. It absolutely does. It's just my expectations were worse and I was okay with it. Like I'm going to let that go. There were, it's a movie that's just got an absolutely insane plot. And so if a few visuals are a little, aged, I'm all right.
Yeah. I thought it was all right. I mean, it was about what I expected.
It wasn't. I just know that it would have landed better. I don't mean to make a plane joke there, but it would have landed on me better if it didn't look quite so ancient. It looked real bad.
Sometimes I kind of want a Ted Turner of our time to come in and go, all those black and white movies we all loved? We're going to colorize them. I would like to have somebody come in and just go, all those crappy crashes that really don't really have to be crappy. We can redo those. We can reshoot all of those. All in CG.
I think of that all the time, Scott. Almost every movie we watch, I think, what would it cost to make some of these little things, these visual things, to just remake them and make them better? And why isn't that money flowing,
Yeah. Right? I also think of every time I see anything like this now, I go, they're going to do all this in like that Mandalorian cave now, like the projection cave. Nothing will, anything with a fuselage, with movement, with camera controlled stuff to make it seem like you're outside hanging from a plane, all this stuff. We're now in a place where you can do it on a stage and never leave and not have to be on location. And it will be as believable as the real thing. And
well, you say believable, but you got to remember our brains learn how to observe things. Like when you first watch 3D, you have to actually teach your brain to understand it, to actually conceive it.
When so you say 3D, I'm curious, what do you mean? Like 3D, like stereoscopic 3D?
Like 3D movies and things. Okay. When you go in, you don't actually understand it. You have to kind of train your brain to understand what you're seeing and then translate that into a language that your brain can understand. And I'm curious, like in 97, when we saw these special effects, they looked realistic to us. But as we've gone along, we've learned the things that make it look unreal. Will that also happen with the Mandalorian technique?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know. Eventually,
we will not believe it. We'll be like, oh, those maybe. Characters.
But all the, you're, the but what you're talking right. about, we're not talking about our brains changing. We're talking about techniques improving. Like when that thing landed in the water, nobody was any good at particle effect water stuff. That just didn't exist then.
But we didn't need it to be. Our brains had not been trained to spot. We are only looking at certain things, so our brains didn't know to look for all these other things. And now we're starting.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It isn't your brain, though. It's progress. And as progress happens, you now have a higher expectation. And the higher your expectations, the more progress
there is. I disagree with that. Like, maybe we're saying the same thing.
Let me look at it this way. Like, if you're looking at a computer resolution, and if all you've ever known is 640 by 480, well, then you're fine with it until you see 1024 by 768. And then when you see 1080 by 1920, you're like, oh, my gosh. And then, now we're into 4K. Like, now when you see something old, 640 by 480, it's obvious. And you're like, my gosh, that looks terrible. I can't believe that used to be a resolution I was okay with. It's like that. And I also
want to, like, I this is a great discussion that's been happening ever since Rogue One, basically. And, like, will Grand Moff Tarkin look terrible to us in 20 years? And I don't think he will. Mm. I really don't. I think it will look pretty much exactly as it does now. You know, like you'll see it and go, oh, I can tell there's some fakery going on there, but it's still good. It's real good. Mm. You know, and I think that the thing with Air Force One crashing into the water at the end of this movie, I think people probably felt like it did look a bit fake at the time, you know,
really,
but we were okay with it.
I think your brain can only consume so much information at one time. And I think there was so much leading up to it that your brain only recognized the things that were telling the story and the expectations. I think our expectations change, like Scott was saying, as we go along and we learn these things. And I think as a result, we fill in other bits.
Maybe, but yeah, I remember
how it's done, and we know that we could easily download a piece of software for free that could probably do it better now than
these are all.
So I don't think
factors,
you wouldn't notice the things that were distracting. You wouldn't see them.
I mean, when I remember in theaters seeing this movie and thinking that effect wasn't amazing, but I remember thinking this is as good as we have right now. You know, like I remember thinking, oh, that's cool because we can do that now. It used to be we couldn't even do this. But now that we can do something way better than that, it's hard for me to see it in any other light. Like it's like anything in life. You progress. You see new stuff. Mm-hmm. New stuff's better. And the graphics in this video game are better
new
than the ones we played
better.
Before.
New stuff's better. Hold your roll, Scott.
Like when we saw our first PlayStation.
That's a pretty big statement.
We saw our first PlayStation 1 game. We all lost our minds. 3D is here, baby. Can't believe it. Mm-hmm. And then look at those games now. Holy shit, they look bad. And why? Well, we progressed. And we expect more now because we can.
But
do
I guess more. I guess the question is, when you say we progressed, I think the progression is in our understanding of what we're seeing.
I disagree. This is where I think this is a weird. I mean, it's all very philosophical, and I really enjoy this kind
of
this kind of discussion's fun. But what I'm saying is, look at forget about visuals for a minute. Let's talk about internet speed. Back when you were on a 28K modem. You definitely know the difference between that and what you got today. And what you got today, you can't imagine not ever having again because it's amazing. And if someone said, hey, go back to 28K, you're going to die because it's going to take 8 hours for a 3 megabyte song to download. Whereas
I think that's a very narrow look. Like, how do you perceive time? Is that's
well, I don't even mean time.
Very narrow. I'm talking about time and space. What we see visually.
But I just mean like
it's more complicated.
What is actually happening, and what are your expectations now that you've had it? Like what was life like before antibiotics? Well, people died a lot more, and life expectancy was super low because infections were out of control. And then what happened? That comes around. And not so much. Everybody can survive things like, you know, weird eye infections or whatever it is they had that would lead to worse problems. And now we just have this expectation. Those go away. We're going to notice. We're going to go, oof, man, this was like the before times. It's like, so to me, that's how I look at that plane crash. Now,
and we're looking at this in a very, you know, in a very personal way between, you know, we're both from a certain generation. We've been exposed to the same things for the most part. What are these kids coming up see? Because they've never been exposed to this 1997 Air Force One. What's it like to them? That was the question Randy was asking about Tarkin. You know, is it going to look real to them? Maybe to us.
Mm-hmm. Maybe
we've locked it in.
I'm just saying that everything approaches reality in this age where tech gets better. What we are used to seeing gets better and so forth. It all is approaching reality. And so there's like a leveling off, right? We're getting closer and closer and closer. And at some point we don't care anymore. You made it from 4K to 5K. I don't care anymore because I can't see a difference. And that, like, since we're there, it's real easy to look back way down the curve and go, oh, look at all the progress we have made. Therefore, we will make all of more progress in the future. No, actually, we won't.
I think it's very much what we've learned, not what we're being presented as viewers, because.
Well, it's the same thing, though. Like what
you've
learned.
Sort of. I mean, because you can make something look very realistic and elicit an emotional response, which is what art is. But I mean, I can also be emotionally attached to cartoon characters, which are not based in any reality other than the language that this artist has expressed and that I've chosen to.
Yeah, but that's a separate thing. Like what I'm saying is, like, you can tell the difference between Jurassic Park 1 and the new one they're making now.
I can't.
Why?
Because seen those little bubble cars? No, sir.
Gigantic.
That's dumb.
But I'm talking about CG dinosaurs. There's a gigantic leap forward, and the change is obvious. Even though in '93 our minds were blown by that at that time, the groundbreaking work they were doing.
Right.
That's just like anything else. It's like, you know, yes, there's, you're talking about stylization and going, I recognize a Peanuts cartoon immediately because a Peanuts cartoon is a Peanuts cartoon. It will never, nothing will ever approach it. It's this.
This sounds like you're saying a Peanuts cartoon.
I know,
Peanuts
cartoon. I do it.
Yeah, penis.
Well, I mean, you got to recognize a penis cartoon.
I mean, I was saying everybody penis, does. But
can you?
I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Can you
see the penis cartoon?
I was absolutely talking about a penis.
That's very realistic.
All right. Do you have a guess on what you thought I thought was gross? Because I got to play that.
Gross. It was a moment, but I can't recall what it was.
For me, it's a very subtle, small thing.
Somebody stick their fingers
thing
in their mouth?
Nope.
I already mentioned it at the top of the show, but when Gary Oldman kisses that girl, there was this thing where I was just like, I suddenly could perceive his breath. Like his breath. Just sudden. I'd never thought it. And now Scott has gotten into my head.
Yeah. It's not. I mean, I honestly, that's on the list, but it's not quite there. Because it was creepy, no, but it didn't really bug me too much. All right, here it is. It's the dime store Daniel Stern Russian pilot guy that was temporary pilot. All right, that guy.
Because he was sweaty?
When he was flying that plane or trying to pull it up when they landed and then pulled out again, he had the most disgusting viscous spit rolling off the bottom of that giant lip of his giant bottom lip.
Are you talking about Peter Parker's landlord?
Oh, that's true.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yes, that is who I'm talking about. With the weird daughter and that whole thing.
That was him. I knew I recognized him from somewhere.
Yeah. He's been around. He's done stuff. But his.
So when they landed at Ramstein Airport, is that where they landed at?
I don't know. Ramstein? Was it Ramstein?
I don't know. They kept saying Ramstein. All I could think was Du Hast.
Concourse.
That's all I could think of. I was like, stop it.
You know who's really into Ramstein? Is my daughter. She cannot get enough of that band.
Yeah.
Even today, they're still rocking and doing all kinds of new stuff, and she is just playing it all damn day. I had to
stop.
You were about to say Randy Deluxe is really into
Ramstein. All right.
Oh.
I have all of their stuff. I have been following them closely for.
Do you like that new video where it's like all in the 20s? There's some boobies in it too. But
I don't like to claim to like their.
Don't watch
stuff.
Their videos.
Yeah,
there's literally a porn video they made.
Yeah.
Oh, they did. Ramstein did.
Oh yeah, it was absolutely straight up porn.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, their visual stuff is. I don't need that. Like I think they're such good musicians and music writers. I have no need to see you know, whatever their current conception is of how the United States is ruining the world. And so I mean, I don't know. I just don't. I don't like it.
Oh, is that their thing? I didn't know that was their thing.
Oh, yeah. They're
Yeah, their visuals are harsh.
They're the Lars von Trier of music video makers.
That's hilarious because it always feels like the translated English from German or just the straight up English lines they do sometimes. Sometimes it strike me as like really basic and silly and not really saying much. But then visually they do stuff where it's like, you know, we're all going to die because these guys are psychos. Like, I don't know. I can't quite fix my impression of them lyrically with them as you're describing. Like, that's just weird. Because like, Du Hast Mace is just stupid. It's a stupid repeated line that doesn't really mean anything. Like,
is it? It's really an earworm that's trying to destroy us all, Scott.
I guess so.
You didn't know that?
Well, the Germans. Look out for the Germans.
I'll tell you what, the one of the coolest things of the living in this time is being able to go see Rammstein perform live. Yeah. If you got the chance. I mean, obviously, we may never see it again, but there were years and years where they would come play two shows in the United States, mm-hmm. Because most of the U.S. was unwilling to let them put out so much fire, over the heads of mm-hmm. the audience. And like it was, you know, they were super expensive and difficult to get to. Mm-hmm. And like the, I wish there were more documentaries of people going to see Rammstein shows because they're just so epic.
Well, it's what they do. Well,
done, I just Ray, put Rammstein. I put a link in the chat room. Don't watch that in front of anyone.
Oh, right. The song, it's a Rammstein song, Pussy. And really.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah. Right. Can we say that on Film Sack?
Give us a little heads up.
Yeah. There's a video about a cave that looks like a vagina. Come on, man.
It's just about a little kitty. It's about here. A kitten. Okay. I like kitties. Nothing wrong with a kitty. All right. Let's do some sound clips from the film Air Force One. And I got a few here for you. In fact, do I though? Hold on. Here we go. That scared me for a second. I thought I didn't have them. All right.
I didn't really find anything in this movie worth clipping. So
I guess we're done. Good night, everybody. All right. Here's the here's them saying the name of their movie and early. I like to capture these. So here's an example.
Gentlemen. Welcome to Air Force One.
That's number one. There's more coming later, so don't you worry. This is the wife again, who I really like, although they gave her hardly anything to do, but I like First Lady, what's her name? Marshall.
Yeah, she's first.
Cool. You're going to get yourself reelected.
Okay. There.
Wendy Crewson.
Yeah, she's cool. I liked her. She's just not around much. Like, she's used
no,
to...
No, she's... Yeah.
She's a strong... You may remember she's portrayed
from,
as strong
Sixth and, Day.
Oh, yeah, Sixth Day, yeah. She's,
so she always plays somebody's wife.
That's true.
Yeah.
She's a strong character. She's, you know, there's all this protection with her daughter and all that. That stuff's all fine. They just didn't give her much to do or say. Kind of mm-hmm. Here's a wild Lundergaard appears is this clip here.
These are two of Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard brigades that have been moved north.
The heck do you mean? True coat.
I wish he had more of a cogent role in this movie.
Yeah. I mean, this is early on for him, though. I mean, this was Fargo was just the year before, and he was kind of bit parts and stuff before that, but
I thought Fargo was same year.
He's so freaking good. The Cooler is one of the best movies ever.
Yeah, The Cooler's great.
I haven't seen that yet.
Oh, you should see The Cooler. It's very good.
Mm-hmm.
He's amazing. Let's see, Shameless is really good on. And of course, you know.
Although boy, that I've given up on that show. Once main actress, the oldest daughter left, is like, eh. Didn't really care about the rest of the Gallaghers.
He's apparently good buddies with one of the writers, which is why he's in this. One of the writers on this film is somebody he knew a lot or whatever. Oh, Fargo was, you're right, year before, 96.
Yep. Yeah.
How do I not know that?
I was going to say, I mean, if there's anybody who knows Fargo.
I should know that. I always think it's 97. I don't know why. All right. Moving on to this one. This is how'd they get on this plane here?
How the hell did this happen? How the hell did they get Air Force One?
That is Glenn Close the entire film. Just, she's just a complete freak in it.
Yeah, they don't give her much to do here.
No.
And I missed one little bit. Was the Secretary of State on Air Force One, and that's why the Secretary of Defense kept saying he was in charge?
The head? Right. I think that's right. Isn't that who they shot?
No, that was
Guilfoyle. Wasn't Guilfoyle the...
Oh, right. He is your Secretary of State, correct.
Yeah, CSI brass.
Yep.
Oh, no, he's Chief of Staff. Sorry.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Well, then they didn't show him because the guy that got shot in the room was a
NSA
security
advisor
guy.
Yeah, he was an NSA advisor. You're right. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I was just like, where's the... I guess maybe they didn't... They just pretended we're in a world that doesn't have a Secretary of State, right?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just found that really, really weird.
Yeah, where was the Secretary of Education entering all this? Where was
can we please have what's his name?
Kiefer Sutherland. Where is
Kiefer
he?
Kiefer Sutherland. Yeah, can we?
I was trying to find the fax lady earlier while I was going, but I just was scrolling down. She's listed as future Postmaster General.
What?
No, really?
That's how she's in the credits.
Future Postmaster General.
Points for that.
Freeman.
Points for that. That's great.
Great.
I love that.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I'm sure she did a great job. We've ruined whatever work she did.
She loves company.
Yeah. Whatever great work she did, we've ruined it now. All right. Moving on. Here's Sam from Quantum Leap. I thought of Ibbit immediately because I know he loves that show. So here you go.
What are our airborne scenarios?
There are no airborne scenarios.
Well, we better start generating them, haven't we, General?
That's him also.
He's Al, not Sam.
I mean, Al. I always say Sam.
Yeah.
I always do that. But yeah, that's his volume as well. He's just that the whole thing.
And so he was Al, and there was the episode where Sam was Lee Harvey Oswald. His boss was the Daniel Stern looking big sweaty lip, spitty lip pilot dude, Russian looking dude. Yeah. And he was JFK, or he was Lee Harvey Oswald. And who did Gary Oldman play?
Lee Harvey Oswald.
Lee Harvey Oswald connection.
Weird. Yeah.
It all comes around.
Wow. That's a fantastic connection. All right, here's a terrorist entry into the room. Oh, this made me laugh. Okay, so the terrorists bust in here, and the way they did, and the music cue, I don't know why. It was way too overdramatic, and it made me laugh. It's just so like, listen to that.
That's like the overdramatic
chipmunk.
Yeah, what? No, it's not chipmunk. What? It turns around and looks at you. What is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, the chipmunk.
Squirrel. I mean, it's squirrel. I thought it was a dramatic chipmunk. Was the meme? No,
no. Prairie dog.
Chipmunk.
Prairie dog or something like prairie that. Dog? He's is it? I
don't think so. Monk.
I think dramatic. It's a prairie dog.
I think it is a prairie dog, but I could have sworn that the meme is under dramatic chipmunk.
Brian Ibbett is correct. Dramatic chipmunk.
Interesting,
is the name,
but it is a prairie dog. You are right in the actual species.
Yeah,
right.
This is what we do as a people. Now we screw everything up, and then it stays, and then it's always screwed up.
Exactly.
But yes, dramatic chipmunk is the correct answer.
Is it a capybara? Is it a capybara?
Popeye. All right, say it again. Here's the name. It's Air Force One. All right, well done. That's the movie. Okay, here are all the things.
His wife, his daughter, his chief of staff, his national security advisor, his classified papers, and his baseball glove.
Wow. That's a lot of official things, and then one that isn't as official.
Why would you
that's the one that the
glove?
Next character mentions as well. He'll be catching balls with his baseball glove as soon as we're done here.
Yeah, I mean, Randy, to answer your question, I think he probably just sits in his office and like throws a ball into it or whatever. I don't know.
Nothing more American, right?
I mean,
that's just what we do.
In theory. I mean, I find it cathartic to have a baseball glove on and to just sort of casually toss it into the glove over and over. I do like that, but I don't know why the president would like that, but whatever. How's your blouse? He was pretty interested in that blouse, seemed like.
Is it sweaty? Is your sweaty blouse? I can smell you from here.
You're sweating through it.
How's your blouse?
All right. Oh, that reminds me of that sounds like his Dracula character.
How's your blouse?
From Brainstormer's deal.
From,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. With, yes, blouse.
Oh, by the way, I almost forgot to mention this. Sorry. That reminded me of Dracula, which reminded me that Keanu Reeves is in that movie, which reminded me to tell Brian Ibbett that 2021 is the year Johnny Mnemonic happens. So,
really? Is that the future?
The yep. That's the year they're in during that film that you walked out of in the theater.
I want service.
All right, here's a play catch with some balls.
Play catch with this guy's balls.
Okay. That's them on the ground working it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Here's Gary Oldman yelling in a movie. That's what he likes to do.
No!
All right. That's where he finds out the president got away in the pod. Little did he know.
Mm-hmm.
He yells again.
So if he gets away in the pod, if he actually was in it, does that become Air Force One?
Well, that's AirPod One.
AirPod One?
AirPods. Yeah, they're AirPods.
AirPod Max One?
Yeah, they're AirPod Max.
What's the president of? They just became regular AirPods.
That's right. And if you...
I'm in the crapper. Air Crapper One.
Air Crapper One. Air Shitter One.
That's right. Air Crapper Two.
Yeah, duh.
Come right. on.
Is that Air Crapper One or Air Crapper Two? We just wonder how long it's going to be,
Deuce,
sir.
Air Deuce Two.
Air Deuce Two. I like it. All right, here's Gary Oldman yelling again.
Murdered 100,000 Iraqis to save a nickel on a gallon of gas. Are going to lecture me about the rules of war? Don't!
Jeez.
Doubt.
Wow. I don't know why, but like, I close my eyes and I have him in the Honeyduke cellar in Hogsmeade yelling at Peter Pettigrew.
He really like his role in Harry Potter, I think. I think that's what this says.
It's just the yelling and the anger, I guess.
Sirius Black was perfectly cast as Sirius Black.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
100%. I like him in everything. I think he was a good Jim Gordon. I think he's an amazing...
He's great Sid Vicious.
Yeah. Just a good... Like, put Gary Oldman in all your... I haven't seen that new... Mm-hmm. There's a new Fincher movie out called... it's Oscar Beatty as hell. It's about the guy that wrote Citizen Kane. And I forgot the name.
Orson Welles?
No, the guy that wrote it. Because Orson Welles didn't write it. He just was in it and paid for it and like got obsessed with it. But it was the other guy that wrote it or co-wrote it with him or whatever. And I forgot his name, but that's the name of the movie is his last name. And he's supposed to be amazing in it.
Oh, right. Herman Mankiewicz. It's called The Mank.
The Mank. That's it.
Oh, The Mank. Mank.
Okay. That's a terrible name.
I mean, I agree. But he's supposed to be real good. Like you would expect. It's Gary Oldman. My gosh.
Churchill, too.
Yeah, he was a really good Churchill. Which was hard to do that year, because also Lithgow was a very good Churchill.
Yeah, it was a year full of Churchills.
Yeah, lots of Churchills.
I'm actually all set. I'll watch Mank later today. I will watch anything directed by David Fincher. Like, he could direct a Rammstein video and I'd watch it.
Whoa. And now we found the perfect thing where Randy will only watch Rammstein videos if Fincher was involved. I love that.
Fincher.
We need to do Alien 3 on this show because I think it holds up better than people think. Mm-hmm. And Fincher's a genius.
Yeah, I agree.
So
I just want to put it out there because I think putting it out there in the universe might make it happen, whatever that means. David Fincher, Mr. Fincher. The universe needs many more seasons of Mindhunter.
Yeah.
Please find a way.
Yeah. At least
find
one more.
A way.
At least one more. I need Hank. Is it Hank? What's his name?
Got to close up the Kansas City, the BTK killer situation.
I should
really be speaking to Joe Penhall, but yeah. I'm my understanding is that Fincher is the money behind that thing, and please spend the money.
Well, he also directed a ton of episodes, and I mean, I know he's busy, but come on, dude. Mindhunter's amazing. Or Mindhunters? Mindhunter.
Mindhunter.
Mind.
Was that a plural?
Hunters. Yeah. Shit. I don't remember. Whatever it is.
That's probably not important.
But I need to know, what's his name? Who's the guy we love who's this kind of...
It's proven that you don't have to know everything about something to love it.
Not Holt, the other one.
Holt McCallany? Oh, Jonathan Groff, man. Jonathan Groff. Mm.
Or no, maybe I'm thinking of... Well, whoever played the guy at the end where he went to his house, sat on his bed, and his wife had left him. I need closure for him. I love him.
Oh.
Can't think of his name in the show. Anyway, whatever. The rumor is that show's canned, and it pisses me off because that was two of my favorite seasons of anything. All right.
Yeah, Joe Penhall, make it happen.
Yeah, Joe Penhall. Mm-hmm. Penhall. We're going to call you that until you fix it. Penhall.
Oh,
jeez.
Here's some good bullshit.
This is bullshit.
Okay.
This is bullshit. I knew as soon as he said that you're going to clip it, we're going to use it forever.
The only problem with it is he starts it on the radio.
This is bullshit.
So you get the this on radio.
Yeah.
This, and it sounds wrong, but whatever. I'll take it. It's almost as good as, do I have this handy? Hold on. She speaks the bullshit. Here it is.
She speaks the bullshit.
I love that Laszlo line from What We Do in the Shadows. Okay, let's see. Our next one is this clip here, which is, Mr. Lundegaard, Jerry Lundegaard says that they're too high. Something about the height of the plane before thing. It has to be low enough to start putting people out the back. I just captured the part where he said he was too high.
We're too high.
I thought that was pretty good.
Seriously, we're too high, dude.
That's more of a Shameless than a Fargo.
Yeah.
We're too high.
We're too high, man. All right, here's some mumbo jumbo.
Voice lines and faxes are on two different systems of encryption.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's It'd be how. Real easy to forget one.
Yeah.
I've forgotten both.
The encryption part is bullshit, but whatever. Here's that dude from Seinfeld who's in all sorts of stuff, and I think there's some crossover even with, was he in The Cooler? I forget. Anyway, this guy.
The president is not merely out of contact. He is also under duress. His family is held hostage. Possibly himself a hostage. It creates an incapacity to discharge the office under the 25th Amendment.
And I actually thought all that was super interesting.
Yeah. That's Philip Baker Hall, and he's like so underused in this. And I always connect him with Magnolia.
Oh, he's so good.
He was so good.
Yeah,
so good in that.
I just think of him as that weird library detective on Seinfeld.
The library detective.
Yeah. But he's so, you're right, he's underused, but also that subplot was really interesting because it's a really interesting bunch of questions that you'd have to ask. Like, what does it mean? Like, at what point do you say, yes, the president is no longer able to truly 100% be the president? Is it that he's under duress, that he's running around with a gun in the basement of a plane? Is it that his daughter's being held hostage and there's no way he can think in the national interest during that moment? Like, that's interesting stuff. And they just kind of glossed over it. And I wish there would have been more.
All right. Like, I also worked with Macy in Boogie Nights.
That's the comment. That's the one I was thinking of. I knew they worked together, but it wasn't. I guess it wasn't.
Yay. I wasn't the one who brought up that movie.
Yeah.
do you bring that up a lot? Do you get,
Years and years ago, I got an email from a listener saying that they wish I would stop bringing up that movie.
Really?
Oh, wow.
I had brought it up like three times.
Was it Mark Wahlberg? Was that?
Yeah. Did he say Mark Wahlberg sent you the email? Stop talking about that movie and say hi to your mother for me.
Yeah. I think I found a repeated word you say a lot. Hey, Brian Dunaway, or no, not Dunaway. Emails, I'm not going to share it on the show, but we got this email yesterday. Somebody,
great.
So for those who aren't aware, and most of you are, but Randy works at Blizzard Entertainment, and we got this email of somebody who's like, I'm getting you through FilmSack, but I'm actually trying to get you to add a bunch of features to Warcraft 3. It was the weirdest thing. So, dude, whoever that guy is, if you're listening, FilmSack is not going to get any of that. All right, we can't. Yeah, we have no control over anything happening.
We don't negotiate with terrorists.
Well, it's like going to Dunaway and saying, "Hey, can you make it so Walmart cleans their bathrooms more often?" Like, why?
That actually might be effective. I actually have an in.
You have an in. You know a guy.
Yeah, I know.
Just call Harrison Ford, and he will get on the phone to Walton immediately.
Right, well, we get your larger point. Yes, Scott, we'll get your larger point.
I totally get the through line, too, because I'm the Warcraft 3 community manager, and I'm the only name that some players are seeing when they go looking for information on that game.
Yeah.
And so then they go to my personal Twitter account that I use for personal purposes, and they see filmsack.com right there in the – at the top, right? Yep. And it's like, okay, I get it. You just clicked on that and then, clicked to send an email, and understandable, but it's not worth
your if you don't end this with a, but you really shouldn't do that, then they're going to keep doing it. So,
right.
No, don't do it. I don't know. I have struggled for years and years and years with the distinction between your job and your personal social media. Like, there's a lot of people out there who don't make any distinction. They will never see a distinction.
But it's a little like calling 911 because your internet is slow, is what I'm saying. Don't be doing stuff like that, people.
But that's an emergency.
Go to the proper channels. Even though you think this is the channel, it's not the channel.
Like 200.
Yeah.
Okay, low ping.
Here's a don't ask something I can. Some kind of Harrison Ford thing. Oh, I love when he does this. This is great. Listen.
Don't ask me for something I can't give.
That's great.
I do love it. That is such a Harrison Ford thing.
Yeah.
I love it when you get all
like, don't ask me for something I can't give.
I didn't kill my wife.
Yeah. It was a one-armed man.
I don't care. All right. Here's the final one, which I wrote as get off my pain, but we all know what I meant. Here it is.
Get off my plane.
Okay. We'll get off your plane. And as we do, we click this. It's the Film Sack Checklist. No one told us we'd get such a comedy couple performance out of Glenn Close and Dean Stockwell. Check.
Right.
Scary old man. Check. Never trust Jerry Lundegaard to be your first time co-pilot. Check. He didn't really. I mean, he was fine. He was dedicated.
Always trust. He was a good guy. Yeah, he was the best guy.
I don't know why he kind of made a weird thing like, it was you, like when he got shot.
Oh, yeah.
That's a weird thing to say.
Because you, dun, dun, dun.
You're not, it was not like the whole time you were going, well, who did it? And now suddenly you're like, it was you. Like, come on. That was dumb. Anyway, rest in peace, Jerry. Soundtrack grade, we're going to give it a JG as hell for Jerry Goldsmith. It is very Jerry Goldsmith. Very of the era. And, that stuff sounds like
all borderline those. Inappropriate. There were lots of times when I was suddenly singing along with the score, and it was like I'm singing Beauty and the Beast, or I'm singing, I'm like, oh, Dances with Wolves. I'm totally seeing Kevin Costner riding across the American plane. You know. Mm.
By the way, the National Security Advisor was in Dances with Wolves. Now that you mentioned that little connection there, yeah, played a Confederate. Dude, let's see here. We got Twitter posts. This is where you guys sum it up in 280 characters. That's the limit or less. Let's start with Randy.
Air Force One, a bunch of middle-aged dudes in various costumes join a very small number of women in being crowded together and fearful, just hoping to get off, just like a Saturday night at Ebbets House.
Oh. It's Saturday today. We'll see how it goes tonight.
I know, right? Expectations fulfilled.
Warm. Boy, like coming back to a warm bath. Just like a Saturday night.
Yeah. It all goes to the same destination. Final destination. All right,
just
Brian
like
Dunaway.
My toilet. Air Force One teaching us if you give Harrison Ford a cookie, he's going to want a glass of milk. And a tour of Air Force One. Where's the pod? No pod? Get off my plane.
Yeah, get off my plane.
I'm sorry.
We forgot the whole if you give a mouse a cookie thing. I completely forgot to talk about that.
Well, there you go. Finally, Mr. Brian Ibbett.
Air Force One. Mr. President, I am cooperating. You got to take that zip line. I'm not going to debate you here, Mr. President. Just don't scratch the true coat.
I'm grateful for your Fargo references.
I am too.
Put that on the factory.
There you go. well done. That summed up things pretty well, I think. So now we check the proposed titles that the film almost got. Didn't get them, though, in the end. It went with Air Force One, but instead it was almost called Everyone Back in Washington Freaking Sucks. Or... The presidential pod people. A couple quick emails this week, because we got a couple. First emails of the year. Big thanks for everyone who sends us emails. Filmsack@gmail.com is where you send them. We got one from Alan. I can't say the name Alan without seeing that meme of the chipmunk or whatever it is out on a fence post going, Alan! 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 Have you guys seen that?
Yes, but I didn't think about it until you described it.
Now all I can see is it.
Every time. Yeah. All right. Anyway, it says, I've been listening to you guys since 2010. Jeez, 10 years ago. Wow. Thank you for being here. I wanted to thank you all for making me laugh out loud weekly for the last half of 2020. I've lost relatives and friends and the creator of my other favorite podcast, so I started listening to FilmSack all over again. You guys are truly magical in your comedic analysis of the best worst films. I just wanted to thank you, Scott, Brian, and Randy. You guys really help me feel not alone in this world, Alan. Well, I just thought that was a really nice thing to say.
You're not alone. You've always got us.
Yep. We're here till we're dead. So enjoy.
We did not plan an exit strategy. We we're stuck.
Nope. We have this train has no stops.
That's right. One of the Snowpiercer podcasts.
That's right.
We are choosing this day to announce our taunting, though. The four of us, I guess, have to... I'll go into a financial pact together.
That'll do it. Yeah. We're ready. Finally, Alan, thank you for your email. We got one more from Daryl in Ohio who says, help, help, it's happening. Cliffhanger is streaming on Amazon Prime. Now you guys need to make the best Christmas present ever to the world. Get on it. Saturday night at Ibbets House style. Love the snow globe. Daryl in Ohio. All right, so here's the thing. Speaking of Die Hard on a whatever, this is Die Hard on a Mountain, and
Die
we
Hard
have
on a mountain.
Forever yeah. been picking at this scab, so we got to do it. When is that? It's out now. It's on. Yeah, it's streaming.
It's a week after our next one, I think.
Yeah, we gotta watch Almost Famous. Thanks yes, to
which is Die Hard on a tour bus.
Yeah, yeah. So we're doing Almost Famous next week, and then the week after that,
poor Randy.
Cliffhanger.
Yippee-ki-yay, Tiny Dancer.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. True Northern Exposure for what's her name on the mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've seen the movie, don't remember a damn thing. So pretty excited, actually, to get our Sylvester Stallone on in 2021.
It's got Lithgow in it. Gotta love that.
Is he a bad guy?
He's a bad guy. Spoiler alert, he's a bad guy.
Is he a great big bad guy? Is that what he is?
He is so often the bad guy.
Is he a bad guy? Bad guy, right?
Bad guy.
But not bad guy?
Pop guy? Pop guy.
Popeye bad guy?
Never gets old. Anyway, so there it is, Daryl. We're watching it. Two more films and you're there. So next week, again, Almost Famous. It is still streaming, it seems. According to Randy, he watched it already.
Yeah,
and,
if nothing else, Randy can tell us all about it.
Yeah, you can tell us early.
Yesterday, I'm just going to roll right in and do that show right now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Why not?
It made me realize that we have several Cameron Crowe movies to sack eventually, like Aloha, and we will get to them.
Ooh, Aloha. Is that a thing?
Aloha.
Yeah.
I don't even know that.
I don't know what that is.
I can't imagine what you would do for your intro.
Yeah.
I know.
Right?
Aloha, aloha.
By the way.
Aloha.
And then when you leave, it'd say aloha.
Almost Famous is now 21 years old.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
It's old enough to drink.
That's right. My son was.
So I've avoided it for 21 years.
Oh, I can't watch Aloha. I just watched Aloha like a month ago.
Oh, well then forget.
Oh.
And I was going to recommend it, but it's horrible.
Oh, well then we're not watching that. I trust you on that. I know
we'll
enough
talk.
About
we'll
your
talk.
Taste to know.
We'll talk afterwards.
We'll negotiate later.
Yeah.
Anyway, Almost Famous next week. Week after that, we're on the mountain. With a cliffhanger. So check that out in the meantime.
I hope he doesn't drop anybody.
No, that would be bad. Unless it's John Lithgow, who is apparently the bad guy. So let's make that happen. He won't let you dance. Drop him. All right. Check it out. Filmsack.com is our website. You can email us filmsack@gmail.com. And as always, you can follow us on Twitter at Filmsack. And if you'd like to leave us a review on Spotify or Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows, it helps us move up in the ranks. And we'd love for you to do it. So please do. That's filmsack.com for all those details. That's going to do it for us. For me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Get off my plane.
We'll see you next time.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Yes. Get more at frogpants.com.
Don't ask me for something I can't give.
Okay.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.